Okay, so get ready because today we're diving into a story from the Urantia book, and let me tell you, it reads like a cosmic thriller. I mean, we're talking planetary rebellion, fallen angels, the whole shebang.
Yeah, it's really a fascinating narrative, you know, one that gets at some much deeper truths about human nature, cosmic order, you know, and just what it means to make a choice and what the consequences of those choices are.
Right. And for anyone who isn't familiar with the Urantia book, it's this really expansive text. It lays out this whole cosmology and gives this incredibly detailed history of Earth, of Urantia, as they call it. And some of the events it describes are pretty mind-blowing, to say the
Yeah,
least.
for sure.
Like today, we're going to be focusing on one of the most dramatic episodes in the whole book, the fall of Caligastia.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so for our listeners who are maybe just dipping their toes into Urantia for the first time, can you give us a little bit of background on this Caligastia character? Who was he in this cosmic drama?
So Caligastia was the planetary prince of Urantia. Now, that's Earth for all of
Mm-hmm.
us. So basically, imagine a being with incredible knowledge, immense power.
Okay.
And they're entrusted with this super important task of guiding humanity's evolution.
So a pretty sweet gig, right?
Yeah, you could say that.
What went wrong?
Well, that's where things get really, really interesting. So you see, Caligastia wasn't just going about this cosmic endeavor all by himself.
Yeah.
He had a whole staff, advisors, and even this like direct connection to higher spiritual authorities.
Okay.
But here's the thing. He also had free will.
Free will, always the wild card in these cosmic stories.
Exactly right. And the Urantia book really digs into that. It's like within that free will, that's where the seeds of rebellion, that's where they started to grow.
Okay, so we've got this planetary prince tasked with guiding humanity, and he decides to go rogue. Is that what we're saying here?
Yeah, basically, the Urantia book describes how he ends up falling under the influence of Lucifer.
Lucifer, of
That's
course.
right. This being of great brilliance, as the book puts it, but he'd started this whole rebellion against the established order of the universe.
Okay, so this isn't just like a minor disagreement. This is a full-blown cosmic insurrection we're talking
Oh,
about.
yeah, it's a big deal.
And Earth's planetary prince is siding with the rebels. What was he thinking?
I know, right?
Yeah.
And that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? I think it's something that's really intrigued people who've read the Urantia book for decades. I mean, what would possess him to do something like this? The text itself does give us some clues. Like, it suggests that he was really drawn in by the promises that Lucifer was making, promises of freedom and self-determination.
Ah, there it is. That word liberty. It always seems to be at the heart of these cosmic power struggles.
Yeah, it's a loaded word for
Yeah.
sure. And in this story, it becomes super pivotal. But as we get further into it, we'll see how the kind of liberty that Lucifer's offering, it's not really about liberation at all. It's more about him wanting to take over, to replace the existing order with his own thing, where he's calling the shots.
It's like that saying, right? One person's freedom fighter is another person's tyrant. So how does all of this actually play out on Earth? Does Caligastia just like call a press conference and announce, "Hey, everybody, I'm in charge now"?
It wasn't quite like that, but he does make this really dramatic grab for power. The Urantia book describes how he calls this big meeting. It's like all of Urantia's highest councils, you know, like the big decision makers, are there.
Okay.
And he just comes right out and says, "I'm going to rule everything now as absolute sovereign." And get this, independent of the universe government.
Oh, wow. Talk about a hostile
I
takeover.
know, right? It's intense.
So, how did everyone react? I mean, what happens in this meeting?
It's described as this moment of complete shock. I mean, imagine you're in that room. You're with this being that you revere, that you've trusted to guide your planet. And suddenly they're like, "I'm the dictator now." It's wild.
Yeah, I can only imagine the chaos that must have ensued after that kind of announcement. So, did anyone stand up to him? Did anyone challenge him?
Yeah, there was this one really important figure who dared to confront him head on. His name was Van, and he was the chairman of this supreme council that Caligastia had basically just tried to overthrow.
Okay, so Van is like the voice of reason in all of this. Yeah.
Exactly. He sees right through all the things Caligastia is promising and recognizes how dangerous it all is, that it'll just lead to tyranny. So he steps up, confronts him, and he appeals to Caligastia's better nature, reminds him about this really sacred duty he was given,
Wow.
and he even goes so far as to call upon higher authorities in the universe to intervene.
Okay, so there's a chance of outside help here.
Right, you would think so. But this is where things take a really, really wild turn. Because, remember, Urantia is in the middle of this whole rebellion thing.
Yeah.
So because of that, they immediately put the planet under quarantine.
Oh, wow.
It's totally cut off from any communication with the rest of the universe. Imagine that feeling, right? Like the isolation, the crushing weight of knowing that nobody's coming to help.
Oh, man, that's intense. So they're completely on their own, facing down this cosmic dictator, and there's no backup coming. What happens next?
Well, with Urantia on lockdown and the battle lines drawn, the planet plunges headfirst into this huge conflict. I mean, it's not just a battle over land or resources or anything like that. This is about the very soul of humanity, and everybody's forced to choose a side.
Okay, so this is where things start to get really interesting. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll unpack everything that happens during this cosmic rebellion, and we'll hear the stories of those who resisted and fought back against the darkness. Don't go anywhere.
All right, so we're back, and things on Urantia are about to get really, really real. Like, last we left off, Earth was totally quarantined, Caligastia had made his move, declared himself the big guy, and Van was left there standing up to him.
It's such a powerful moment in the story, you know, because it really gets at this whole idea that plays out throughout the Urantia book about free will, like this interplay between free will and then like this divine order. It's almost like, yeah, there's this big cosmic plan, but beings still have the power to just, I don't know, go a different way, even if that way means going directly against the plan. Yeah, it's that double-edged sword of free will, right? Incredible growth and progress are possible, but it also paves the way for some pretty epic disasters.
Totally. And in Caligastia's case, that disaster, yeah, it unfolds across an entire planet.
Right. We're talking about an all-out cosmic civil war.
Totally.
Right.
And it's not just humans caught in the crossfire. It's also all these celestial beings that are hanging out on Earth at the time. Urantia is totally isolated, and boom, it's this planet-wide conflict that forces everyone to pick a side.
Okay, so who are the major players on each side of this cosmic showdown?
Well, on one side, you've got Caligastia and his crew, all the ones who got swept up in his whole liberty and self-determination campaign promises.
Yeah.
Although it's interesting because the Urantia book, it doesn't paint all of Caligastia's followers as straight-up evil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like some of them were genuinely buying what he was selling, thinking he actually had a better plan, a way to break free from all these rules they saw as holding them back.
So it's not as black and white as we might think. Not just good versus evil.
Not even close.
Yeah.
It's way more complex than that. There are definitely shades of gray on both sides. And then on the other side, you've got Van and the loyalists. So these are the beings who are staying true to that original plan for Urantia's evolution. They get that real freedom, true liberty. It's not about just ditching all authority. It's about aligning with something bigger, a higher order, right? Something that goes beyond just like personal ambition and ego.
Okay, so these loyalists, they weren't just sitting back hoping for a miracle, right? What were they doing to resist?
Oh no, they were definitely taking action. They were putting up a fight. The Urantia book describes how Van and his people set up this stronghold. They were guarding something called the Tree of Life. And get this, this wasn't just some metaphor or symbol. It was a real tangible tree with some crazy life-giving power.
Wait, hold on. A literal tree of life. What did it do?
Well, the book suggests that this tree gave off this special kind of energy, almost like a life force, that sustained Van and the Loyalist, not just physically, but spiritually too, during this whole chaotic time. It was almost as if it offered this like spiritual sanctuary, a lifeline to something divine while everything else was falling apart.
Man, that's a powerful image. Holding on to hope in the shadow of this cosmic tree while a full-blown rebellion is raging around you. So where does humanity fit into all of this? I mean, we're talking about these incredibly powerful beings going head-to-head. What was it like for everyday humans on the ground?
You know, for most people, it was a time of intense confusion and fear. Imagine seeing the beings you've always looked up to, the ones you believed in, suddenly turning against each other. Your whole world is shaken to its core. But in the middle of all this craziness and uncertainty, there's this truly remarkable human being who emerges. His name was Amadon.
Amadon. Right, right. This name comes up a lot in the Urantia book. Tell us about him. Who was he?
Okay, so Amadon was a descendant of the Andonite race, one of the first human lineages. And he wasn't a prophet or a king or some great warrior, just a regular person who found himself in this completely insane situation. But here's the thing about Amadon. He had this unshakable loyalty to Van and to what was right.
Okay, so what did this unwavering loyalty look like in the middle of a cosmic rebellion? What made him so special?
See, that's the thing. Unlike Caligastia, with all of his cosmic knowledge and experience, Amadon was a pretty simple dude. He didn't have these big visions of the universe or this deep understanding of, like, celestial mechanics. But what he did have was something arguably way more powerful, He had this rock-solid moral compass.
So everyone else is losing their minds in this cosmic power struggle, and Amidon's just like, nope, I'm sticking with what I know is right.
Exactly. He just cuts through all the noise and sees the truth of the situation. He recognizes how messed up Caligastia's promises are and chooses to stick with Van, even when it seemed like the whole universe was going to hell in a handbasket.
Wow. And this choice, his choice to stay true, that becomes a big deal, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. The Urantia book describes how Amidon's refusal to back down, his unwavering loyalty, it becomes this beacon of hope.
Yeah.
And not just on Urantia, but throughout the universe. Here you have this ordinary human, no special powers, no cosmic clout, just standing firm in his convictions, even as everything is falling apart around him. It's a powerful testament to how much one being's choice can matter, how choosing to do what's right can have a ripple effect far beyond what we can even imagine.
That's an incredible story, and I can see why it's resonated with so many people. But we're only halfway through. What happened to Amidon? Did he and Van manage to turn the tide? What about Caligastia and the rebellion? We'll have to take a quick break, but we'll be right back to dive into the thrilling conclusion of the Urantia Rebellion. Stay with us. All right, so here we are back on Urantia, and things are still very much up in the air. It's a full-blown cosmic rebellion, right? Sure. Orchestrated by a planetary prince who's gone rogue. But in the midst of all this, you've got these beacons of hope, Van and Amidon, showing us that even when things are at their darkest, you know, there's always that glimmer of light, and it can come from some pretty unexpected places.
And that's such a crucial thing to remember as we get into this last part of the story. The Urantia book, it doesn't sugarcoat things. It shows the really serious consequences of what Caligastia did, but also never lets us forget about the strength of the human spirit, that power of choice that we all have, and that unwavering presence of something bigger than us, that cosmic order.
Right, right. So how does this whole thing actually wrap up? Do Van and Amidon find a way to, I don't know, overthrow Caligastia? Like, is order restored to Urantia?
Well, what the Urantia book seems to say is that when it comes to cosmic rebellion, like, there's a point of no return, you know? Once those decisions are made, once individuals have really thrown their lot in with either the rebellion or the divine plan, that's when the universe steps in.
So it's almost like the universe was waiting for the right moment, like that last domino to fall before making its move.
That's an interesting way to look at it. And yeah. It really shows how complex it all is, you know, this dance between free will and divine intervention. And for Urantia, that moment comes and the universe takes action, like, pretty swiftly. The Urantia book describes how this high-ranking being shows up from Edentia, that's kind of like the galactic HQ for this area of space, and their whole purpose is to deal with this situation.
It's like the cosmic cavalry finally arrives.
Right.
I bet Caligastia wasn't too thrilled to see them.
Not even a little bit.
Yep.
And it's not just this one being either. The Urantia book describes how they bring this group, these celestial beings, called Melchizedeks.
Melchizedeks, right, right. They ring a bell. Can you give us a little refresher on who they are?
So in the Urantia book, the Melchizedeks, they're like this super evolved group of beings, known for their wisdom, fairness, their authority. Basically, they often act as judges and mediators in these big cosmic disputes.
So when the Melchizedeks show up, you know it's serious.
100%. No messing around. And when they arrive on Urantia, they've got a very clear objective. End the rebellion. Restore order. Hold everyone accountable for what went down.
Okay, so what about Caligastia and his crew? What happens to them?
So with these higher-ups there, Caligastia and his posse, they get stripped of everything. Their power, their authority, gone.
Just like that.
Imagine how humbling that must have been, right?
Yeah.
To go from this position of such influence to basically nothing, cut off from the source of their power.
It's a long way to fall from planetary prince to, well, whatever they became. So what did become of them?
They're basically stranded on Earth, cut off from that universal life force they were plugged into, and forced to deal with what they'd done.
It's almost like a fate worse than death, right? No power, no connection to the cosmos, forced to live out their days as what? Just regular beings.
That's the thing. The Urantia book actually suggests that these fallen celestial beings, desperate to survive in this new reality, they end up interbreeding with humans.
Whoa, okay. Hold on. So some of those old myths about gods coming down to Earth and, you know, mingling with mortals, the Urantia book is saying there might be some truth to that.
It's a fascinating connection, isn't it? And it gives us a whole new way to understand those stories. But while Caligastia and his followers face this dramatic downfall, the loyalists, well, their story goes in a very different direction.
Right. What about Van and Amidon? How do things end for them?
So the ones who stayed true, who held on to their faith and integrity throughout all the chaos, they're given this amazing opportunity, a chance to return to their rightful place in the universe. And you know what? They were celebrated for their courage. Their stories became the stuff of legend.
Well deserved, I'd say. After everything they went through, a little cosmic victory lap is definitely in order.
Totally. But here's where it gets really interesting again. While most of the Loyalists, they decided to head back to their home planets, Van, the one who stood up to Caligastia right from the start, he made a different choice. He decided to stay on Urantia.
He stayed. Why would he do that after everything that happened?
That's the thing about Van. The Urania book paints him as this incredibly compassionate and responsible being. He felt this deep, deep sense of obligation to Urantia, like he had to stay and help heal the planet, guide humanity through the long recovery from everything they'd been through.
Wow. He's like the cosmic version of a first responder, staying behind after the disaster to help everyone rebuild.
I love that analogy. And he wasn't alone. Amadon, that ordinary human who'd become this symbol of unwavering loyalty, he decided to stay too, right by Van's side. And together, they devoted themselves to helping humanity through this period that the book calls the Long Dark Ages following the Rebellion, trying to protect the truth, rekindle that spiritual spark, and help humanity find its way back to its true potential.
It's an incredible story, this legacy of service and dedication. It really makes you think about Caligastia's rebellion, you know? Like, did it fundamentally change the course of human history? And this idea that sin has these cosmic ripple effects, what does that mean for us?
These are the questions, right? The ones that have stayed with people who've read the Urantia book for generations. Because even though it gives us this incredibly detailed account of this whole rebellion, it also leaves room for us to think for ourselves, to contemplate, to come to our own conclusions about what it all means for our lives today.
Yeah. And maybe the biggest takeaway is that even in the middle of all this cosmic drama, we're not just along for the ride. We have the power to choose, to take a stand for what we believe in, and to actually make a difference in the world around us, even if we never truly grasp the full impact of our actions.
Beautifully said. And that really gets to the heart of this incredible story from the Urantia book, you know. It's this reminder that no matter how chaotic and uncertain things get, no matter how big the challenges we face, the human spirit, with that power of choice and driven by a sense of higher purpose, it has this incredible ability to be resilient, to be compassionate, to hold on to hope.
And on that note, we come to the end of our deep dive into one of the most fascinating and thought-provoking stories from the Urantia book. But this is really just the beginning, right? We encourage you to explore the book for yourselves, delve into this amazing cosmology, and discover its profound insights into what it means to be human in this vast cosmos.
It's a journey, for sure. One that challenges us to rethink what we think we know, to see things from a wider perspective, and to embrace the wonder of it all.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time.